The sun is shining, it's a beautiful day, and the tank is clean. It's a wonderful, wonderful time in England. Anyway, the sun is really beautiful, and the day is lovely, and it's warm and hot, and it does feel like summer is finally here. So welcome to the Lazy Project Manager podcast from the sunshine. Two pretty interesting interviews this time around. I think I'm very keen to share with you an interview I did with a gentleman called Colin D. Ellis. What a great name. A very smart dressed gentleman and has lots of interesting things to say. But first, we're going to kick off with an interview I did literally today. The day I'm actually recording the full podcast. It was done in Windsor in England, where the Queen lives. It's very exciting. And it's with two people, Vince and Emma, and they're going to tell you all about a very, 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 very special event and award, which will speak to all of us in the world of PMOs. So, welcome everybody. I'm here and I'm in a place called Sunny Windsor. People from the UK will certainly know what Windsor is. There's a big castle just down the road. The Queen lives there. It's a lovely day, and an organisation called Wellington Project Management. And I have two people sitting either side of me. Emma, why don't you introduce yourself to start with, and Vince, after you can follow on.
Hi, Peter. Lovely to be here today. My name is Emma Ruth Onnes Pemberton. I'm the chair of the APM PMO SIG. I'm a consultant that specialises in the setup, inception and kind of development of PMOs. Quite involved in the industry, done some work with yourself in the past, and really work with the PMO SIG as a specific interest group to bring new industry thinking around PMOs to the poor peeps that are working in that space.
The blessed few poor peeps, yeah. Indeed, absolutely. Vince.
Morning. So yes, I'm Vince Hines. I'm the Managing Director of Wellington Project Management. As you say, we're based in Windsor and are an accredited APM training provider. We're a Microsoft Gold partner, and we have a lot of interest in the PMO as part of our consulting services as well.
Okay, perfect. All right, so there's kind of two topics I want to talk about and two reasons I'm here. So one is some very exciting news from APM that there is finally going to be an award for PMOs.
There is. Yay.
PMO of the Year Award. Yay, round of applause. Fantastic. So how did it happen? Please.
Yes, so I think we're because of our consulting services, we do a lot of work with the PMO, and we were very keen. I myself have been a judge for the APM for a number of years, and we've always thought there was a bit of a hole, a bit of an opportunity to celebrate the work of the PMO. So from our side, we've always been talking to the APM about is there an opportunity to establish that award? And there's always pressure every year, I think, for the APM about which award categories they should have. But at the same time, Emma and her colleagues in the PMO SIG, very keen as well to acknowledge the PMO world. And so I think between the two of us, we applied sufficient nagging or requests that actually the APM came around to the idea. And of course, we were delighted to also sponsor the award as well. So I know from Emma, from your perspective, you had a lot of conversations with the APM as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago, we were asked to create some PMO roles for the APM competence framework, which was a big tick in the box for PMOs being recognised as an actual thing in project management. Since then, I became chair of the SIG and I restructured the SIG so that we could create some new functions within that environment, but also to develop some long-term goals. Two of our long-term goals were having an APM award for PMOs, and also for the Registered Project Professional accreditation to include and be accessible to PMOs and other enabling functions as well. The original version was quite hard to actually get through if you weren't in the delivery space. So this year, in 2017, we've actually managed to hit two of our long-term goals. RPP has been refreshed and I'm putting myself through at the moment. But the really big thing, I think, that we don't do very well as PMOs, because we're in that control space, we don't shout about the things that we do enough. So actually getting, eventually grinding kind of Vince down to sponsor the award is fair to say, and applying, like you say, the amount of pressure to kind of say, you know, this is a gap and we need this gap filled. And this year we do, for the first time, thanks to Wellington and the APM, we have the next 2 years at least an award around PMOs.
Well, that's fantastic. Vince doesn't look too ground down, if I'm honest. He's quite happy. And for my international listeners, I'm just at SIG, just in case you're wondering what SIG is. It's Special Interest Group. It's just an acronym there. All right, but okay, this is fantastic. We have an award. We're going to have an award. That's amazing. How do you judge a PMO?
So there is a very clear defined judging criteria, as there are for all the awards. I think, Emma, do you want to talk us through, in high-level terms, what, because Emma's one of the judges as well. So we're both, there is a judging panel, and the way it works is a number of individuals who are long-time judges will judge this particular award category. There is a defined criteria that we're judging against. Emma, do you want to talk us through, in high-level terms, what are you looking for?
What am I looking for? So PMO award is different to the Project of the Year award. In the Project of the Year is, I mean, I could put it in quotes that you can't see, quite easy to kind of go, this is what we delivered, this was the outcome, this was the benefit to the business, and this is what we learned along the way. For PMOs, it's different. What we want to know is, tell us the journey. Tell us your story. Yes, you have to have done something in the last 12 months that actually made an actual difference, but it's about what context does your PMO exist in? Every PMO is different. There isn't a one-size-fits-all. We want to know about your environment. We want to know about people that you have, the different roles, how you help your organisation to deliver successful change, and how you interface with everybody else in your organisation. One of our key things is around, actually, PMOs need to be value-adding business partners. Are you a business partner, or are you kind of on the periphery? We really need to understand the world that you live in. In terms of what you've actually managed to achieve, we look at, you know, what contribution have you made to those successful outcomes? Why have you contributed to those? It's all about understanding how have you contributed to your organization's maturity in project management. In terms of people, we want to know about how you've contributed to the organisation in terms of knowledge management, in terms of culture. What's the legacy that your PMO is going to leave behind, maybe when you move on to the next new and shiny thing? And then for us, it's really important to look about community, to talk about that piece around what have you done to bring that community together in your own organisation? What challenges have you overcome? And for me personally, anybody that does know me and has heard my stuff before, I'm really around innovation. So what are you doing differently? What makes you stand out from the crowd as a PMO? On the website, on apm.org.uk, you can find out all the criteria and more about this particular award and all the other awards. If you want to put yourself forward for more than one, that's absolutely fine. But yeah, for us, it's about the PMO journey. Where have you been? Where have you come from? Where are you going?
Okay, perfect. Oh, sorry, Peter, go on.
Sorry, Peter, I was going to say, and the other thing is, what a very key thing is, this is not about having the best PMO in the world. This is about showing how you've been able to help your organisation go from A to B, how you've added value to your organisation. And I think sometimes people are a bit concerned about submitting an application for an award, thinking, is my PMO going to be the best in the UK? It's not really about that. It's much about the story and the journey that you've travelled, as Emma said. So I would very much encourage anyone who is thinking about submitting for the award, please do. It's not about, is mine the best in the UK? It's not about that. It's about, have I got an interesting story? Have I aligned with the judging criteria? Have we got something to demonstrate, exactly as Emma said, our innovation, how we engage with our community, how we add value? So it's not about being the biggest, the best and the shiniest.
No, my question was, it's a point of clarification. So it's not like, you know, hey, we're a PMO, we've finally reached level 5 maturity, and now we can submit it. You want submissions from everybody along the journey.
Absolutely, and they're just as valid. Absolutely, right. Just as valid, yes.
Perfect. So what's the timeline for all this?
So, the entry process is there's an application that you fill in, and you fill out a document, and you say, give your story, and that story should be no more than 6 pages. You can download that information from the APM's website. website, which is apm.org.uk, the deadline for the stage one entries is the 19th of June. So you've got to get that paper entry submitted by the 19th of June. And please do read the instructions carefully. Please do make sure you don't go over 6 pages. I know we've got a lot of people who've got lots they want to say, but keep it to those 6 pages. And that doesn't mean to say use font size 4 either. So try and keep it really clear, nicely laid out. So as I said, the deadline for that is the 19th of June. What happens then is the judges then review and read all these applications and identify a short list of 4 finalists. And to be honest, by being a finalist, you've, as far as I'm concerned, you've won. You know, you're one of the 4 finalists. Then you're invited to an actual presentation, a stage 2 presentation. Those presentations take place between the 4th and the 7th of September. So there'll be a particular slot within that time period for the 4 finalists for the PMO category. And then during that, after that period, obviously the judges' scorings are added up. And then there is the glamorous event on the 20th of November, the awards ceremony, where the finalists can hopefully sit there, Oscar style, waiting to hopefully go on stage and receive their trophy, or just still be there and celebrate the fact that they are a finalist, which itself will be a marvellous thing to be. So key dates, submit your application by the 19th of June. And on the 24th of July, actually, you'll be told officially, publicly announced that who the 4 finalists are, and the finalists are invited to that presentation between the 4th and 7th of September.
Oh, brilliant. Just imagine standing on stage accepting that award, thanking your friends and family and colleagues and goldfish and all the other things.
With a tear in your eye.
Oh, my goodness me, yeah. That'd be brilliant. And okay, so and something caught my eye, which I have signed up for actually, is that there is in fact a webinar to talk to you all about this coming up very soon on the 6th of June.
Yes, there is. So again, really wanting everyone to have the biggest opportunity possible to take part. And from a judge's perspective, not giving anything away, but actually giving clear instruction as to what we're looking for as per the information on the APM website. We're running a webinar to talk people through that. So we'd really recommend people take part in that, particularly if you're thinking of submitting your application.
Perfect. All right, then. Thank you very much for that. But we will continue talking about PMOs, because the other reason I'm here is I'm actually going to be a speaker at a conference in September, 12th of September in London. Can we say when it is, where it is?
Yes, and we're very excited to have you along. So this is the Future PMO.
Yay.
And it's going to be taking place, all day conference, taking place at Chelsea Football Club. And expecting to be around 200 people there, a very exciting event, very much geared around what is it the PMO is doing, what does the future for the PMO look like, and an opportunity for professionals to meet and talk to colleagues, practitioners from across industry to recognise the good work that they're doing, but also get lots of tips and practical advice on how to develop their PMO for the future.
Brilliant. And Emma, you'll be there as well?
Yeah, I'm also speaking on the day. I'm going to be talking about the value of the PMO, amongst other things. I'm actually supporting organising this conference, which is really exciting for me because it is different. It's different to the other stuff that I normally do for the APM. What with it not obviously being affiliated directly with a charitable organisation. So there's going to be lots of surprises there on the day. We're going to keep it light, fresh and energising. The idea is to inspire PMO people to move their organisation forward in terms of PMO maturity.
It won't be boring.
No, because we've got some very sexy things going on. So we will have, because the theme is the future, it is of course appropriate that we have a time machine. So there will be a DeLorean from the Back to the Future film on display. You can have there's a photo opportunity there. I believe Emma is going to be dressing up as Marty McFly.
That's not happening.
And we've got the costume. Someone's going to have to wear it. And also there will be a robot from the future as well, a robot project manager from the future, which is about 9 foot tall and very scary. So that's you integrating, meeting your future project managers. And there's going to be a lot of fun stuff there. So, yeah, very different to the normal conference. A lot of heavyweight, very significant speakers. And also in the afternoon as well, we've invited along some PMOs from different industries to come and talk about their challenge and talk about how they try and overcome those challenges as well. Not putting them out on a pedestal saying they're the best, but an opportunity for people to listen to their story and say, actually, you know what, that's me as well. How did they try and overcome it? So hopefully getting some real pills of wisdom from practitioners on the PMO that, of course, they can take straight back to their own organisations.
Yeah, sounds good. And you used the phrase sexy. That's it. It reminded me, so when I wrote the book Lean Successful PMOs, and I surveyed a whole bunch of people, and one of the questions was, describe your PMO. And unfortunately, it was a blind survey, so I still don't know who submitted this, but someone responded, sexy. And I've been trying to find out.
It was either Emma or me.
I've been trying to find out how to make the PMO sexy. So clearly, the 12th of September,
we'll
find out. Future PMO. Yes. How do people find out information? How do they book their place?
So they can go to come to our website, which is www.wellingtone.co.uk. There is a dedicated website as well, futurepmo.com. So go there.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, Vince, Emma. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers.
Well, there you have it. Pretty interesting stuff, I think, and something I think all PMO leaders should consider submitting their PMO for. As it was fairly clear said in the interview, it doesn't matter where you are in your PMO journey. We know that, you know, you don't start a PMO, you finish a PMO after X amount of time. You build a PMO and change a PMO and evolve a PMO over a long period of time. So, I was very excited to hear about that, and I'm looking forward to going to the conference, Future PMO, and speaking at that and meeting lots of people there, of course, but hopefully also going to the perhaps the awards evening later on and see the actual winners and runners up for the PMO of the Year award. Right, let's move on to a gentleman who is comes under the banner of Colin D. Ellis, which I think is a great name. As I said, very smart-dressed gentleman. He'll explain a little bit about that, or I'll explain a little bit about that. And he comes to us all the way from Australia, although he's not an Australian. Well, I don't think he's not naturally an Australian. He may be technically or officially an Australian. I don't know. That's irrelevant. But he's a very interesting gentleman. And my thanks goes out to my friend, Julia Cheche, who recommended Colin to me. And, let's hear what Colin has to say. So I'm going to welcome Mr. Colin D. Ellis from Australia. I seem to be having a bit of an Australian theme recently. And I know, Colin, welcome to the Lazy Project Manager podcast. I know you're speaking at the PMI Australia conference on the 28th to 30th of May in Sydney because I interviewed Ben Howell recently. So welcome to the podcast, Colin.
Thanks, Peter, and this is my distinctly non-Australian accent.
So yes.
It's great to be on the show.
Very good. So let me do a bit of an introduction, and I've stolen this from Colin's website. So it says, with 20 years project management and leadership experience, Colin has risen through the ranks from project manager to heading up project departments in large corporates and government departments in the UK, New Zealand and Australia. He delivers speeches, training courses and mentoring programs that live long in the memory, working with corporates of all sizes, agencies, senior leaders and individuals looking to make a difference to their organizations and their teams. And he's also the author of The Conscious Project Leader. And one of the things I particularly liked, Colin, on your website was you listed 13 things about you. And I'm not going to read them all, but the first five are, you said that your favorite book is On the Road by Jack Kerouac. You said that you hold the door open for everyone and frequently be mistaken for a doorman. That you own 27 ties and 19 pocket squares and enjoy wearing them all but not at once. That's impressive. I own 2 ties and no pocket squares, so you definitely have the upper hand there. You always sit in the front of taxis and talk to the driver. Does that not scare them occasionally?
Yeah, occasionally it does. It drives a few of them mad. It's the whole extrovert in me. I just can't sit in the back and keep quiet and look at my phone.
Oh, my goodness. But you haven't tried to do that in a black cab in London, have you? There'd be so much trouble.
They always talk my ears off. I've got that coming up in July, so that should be an interesting conversation.
All right. And you still use a record player. And you can go, you know, the younger listeners can go and look up what one of those is. And I love the fact that number 13 says you are not superstitious. So what a great thing. Now, Colin, we did meet, although this is interesting because I'm interviewing someone I've never heard present or read any of your books. I'm very sorry about that. It will change. But we met briefly in when I was out in Auckland, 2010, 2011, at the PMI conference out there. But listen, you come highly recommended to me by Julia Cheshire, who's one of my, if it's good enough for Julia, it's definitely good enough for me. And then I saw your new book, which is incredible. We're going to talk about that. So why don't you tell the listeners the title of the book to begin with?
The title of the book is called The Project Rots from the Head.
Now,
let's get it straight out.
If that doesn't attract people or hook people, it's up there with insulting a professional like the lazy project manager, I think. So, I know I'm aware that there is a saying, the fish rots from the head down, which is where an organizational state fails. It's the leadership that is the root cause. Interesting, the proverb, it's a bit unclear what the origin of that one is. I based on my simple and shallow Google research, it's appeared in many places, China, Russia, Poland, England, Greece, and so on. No evidence to prove it, really, as to where it came from. One of the early examples of the phrase in print in English prefers the variant, a fish stinks from the head down, to compare to the fish rots, etc. And the Turks apparently have a homely proverb applied to such occasions. They say the fish stinks first at the head, meaning that if the servant is disorderly, it's because the master is so. So your book is out, and I am definitely going to read it. But why don't you start by just introducing yourself in your own words to the listeners?
So the whole 20 years of experience and at the coalface, Peter, really, started off as a project manager in Y2K when it was all about quality and it was all about time. We used to push wheelbarrows of money around, which was great. And I suppose in working for the Mirror Group that I did in the UK and also for Littlewoods that became the Shop Direct Group, and it was a great grounding for me as a project manager. And what I learned more than anything there was it was really about people, it was about teams. And so when I emigrated to New Zealand in 2007, the real emphasis that I had was on leadership and teams at a time when New Zealand was looking for more method, like more cowbell. It was more method. We need more method. We need Prince 2. We need all of this stuff. And so I guess I was a bit of a lone voice at the time to say, well, it's all good and it all works, but it's really who you are as a person and the environment that you create that will make your project successful. And I think that was my message very much throughout my time in New Zealand. I spent 6 great years in New Zealand before emigrating to Australia and headed up large public service project departments over there. And did likewise here in Australia in the public service as well. And then really kind of went out on my own because of my frustration at the fact that projects are still failing, and because you've written about this, for the same reasons that they've been failing for 15 years, and we're kind of losing that real emphasis on people, teams, planning, that makes projects successful. So the work that I do now is I work with organizations pretty much around the world. I'm heading to the US shortly. To help them put leadership and teamwork back into project management, which feels insane because it should be the stuff that we do naturally, but it's the stuff that we don't do naturally.
You would think it. When it is incredible. I mean, I get to travel as well, and I get to go into a number of organizations, and it is forever astonishing that, no matter how sophisticated the organization is in many ways, they still seem to struggle with the fundamentals of project management.
Well, that's right. I just flew back from Perth yesterday, where I spoke at a conference, and I spoke to one guy after my speech. There's lots of energy that goes into my speeches, and one guy said, "Oh, that was great." He said, "But you said build a team, build a plan, deliver the project." He said, "We don't do the first two of those." I was like, "What? what?"
Oh, God.
That's the fundamental bit of projects. It's like, if you don't do those two things, then the third thing you're never really going to do is like, yeah, that explains a lot. And it's extraordinary. I think the builder team thing is we've really lost that, you know. And I remember back to my projects, and you know, when I was program managing, we spent time just building a team.
Yeah,
I remember you talked about it as well.
Yeah,
that's what we did. We got to know each other really well, and we got to figure out, you know, kind of our preferences, personality wise. You know, and we did the whole the team that drinks together stays together, and yeah, we did that stuff, and we learned how to work cohesively, and that's what good collaboration's all about.
Absolutely. And when Colin says drinks together, of course, we are not suggesting just alcohol, because other beverages are available. I know what you mean there. You know, I was contacted very recently by a person who was just they were part of a project team, although it wasn't, because the project manager, for whatever reason, had siloed absolutely everybody. Every piece of communication had to go through the project manager. The team were not allowed to share information, or individuals weren't allowed to share information. And I was struggling to understand what that particular project manager was trying to achieve, or what the situation was. I don't have all the background, but it seemed to be about as anti-project team as you could possibly get. And it was kind of, if that's happening out there, it's just scary.
It's really scary. It really is, and there are just too many examples of it, Peter. And I, you know, there's project failures, like literally every week, major project failures, and it's dispiriting reading it. You know, and you just kind of want people to get their act together and say, it's really not that complex, and we're making it harder than it actually is. And that's not to say projects themselves aren't complex, of course they are. But the business of project management, you know, we're just making it a bit too hard. And what we're doing is creating little fiefdoms around the world, and people telling us how to do things, rather than letting people's personality shine and creating teams that people want to be a part of. You know?
Definitely. Well, I think there's a lot of synergy, because, I mean, my most recent book is How to Get Fired at the C-Level, Why Mismanaging Change is the Biggest Risk of All. And I was challenging those senior executives to just, you know, just do the basics, which is, you know, understand your portfolio of investment, truly understand it, you know, invest in, you know, good project sponsorship development, invest in, you know, a kind of good career path and training for your project managers, and, you know, life could be a lot better, because there are now, you know, there's just an astonishing amount of money that is invested in change at an increasing rate, and yet still, you know, the piece of research that I built this on was that the number one reason that CEOs get fired is because they basically mismanage change, and change is projects, you know, at the end of the day.
Absolutely. You know, I posted a blog on LinkedIn called How to Suck at Project Management. And, you know, it's very tongue-in-cheek. And I think if you've read my stuff, and, you know, some of the things that I do are tongue-in-cheek. But it's got a very real point behind it. Is actually, if you just don't get this stuff right, exactly as you say, then it's a career finisher. It totally is. It really, really is. And I just don't feel that senior managers, particularly senior managers, are taking project management seriously. And so I went. That's why I went with the title of the book, because there's really only two reasons for project failure: except poor project sponsorship, poor project management. Every excuse or every reason that we can come up with is linked to one of those two things. And I just want to see them really take it seriously. I want, rather than just pay lip service to it or pressing the fast forward button. You know, I just want to see a commitment to good project management.
Well, I mean, the subtitle of your book is How Senior Managers Can Stop Projects from Failing Forever. So there's a big, bold statement.
Yeah, and everybody can, Peter. And it's about how serious are you about this? As someone who's changed project delivery cultures over the years, and, you know, I've been able to do that because I've got a lot of things wrong so that I know what works, you know, and I've had a little bit of luck as well, and so that, you know, kind of it all comes together, and the blueprint for success is there. People just don't really want to follow it, and too often they're presented with a list of roles and responsibilities, but they don't understand that they need a different mindset. They don't understand, particularly sponsors, that actually for a big project, it's kind of 10 to 20% of your week should be spent doing that piece of work, but it's just another thing on top of BAU and another thing and another thing. But they can make every project successful if they want it badly enough.
Yep, BAU, business as usual.
That's right.
Yep. We'd love it if the world was projects as usual. So, embedded across the board, absolutely. So I mentioned that you're speaking at the PMI Australia conference. So what are you speaking on at that?
I'm talking about how project managers need to level up and in five key areas, Peter, in the way that they talk about their jobs and the things that they do, in terms of their personality, kind of being a bit more self-aware, in terms of choosing to lead and when it's appropriate to do so, how to communicate better, and also how to create teams that everyone wants to be a part of.
Okay.
So I'm just going to cram all of that into 40 minutes. Sitting down the stage and shouting my excited Scouse accent. And,
I'm jealous. I wish I was out there. I mean, both way out. One for the conference, and secondly, I just fell in love again with Sydney when I saw Vivid Sydney last year when I was out there. And I guess it's going to be the same time. That light show is just extraordinary. And the conferences themselves have just year after year just getting better and better. I was fortunate enough to be the speaker in Sydney for the first All Australia conference, and I was really delighted to be back last year in Adelaide, and I hope one day they might invite me back for a third time.
You never know. Yeah. I was talking to someone about it yesterday. I'm delivering the keynote speaker at the PMI conference in Sydney, and then my next speech is at Cisco Live in Las Vegas. So it really sucks to be me right now.
Oh my goodness me. What a tough life. What a tough life. But it can do. You know, I reflected on the fact that we met way back in Auckland, and I remember in Auckland after the conference, I had a day to do a couple of tours and get a little flavour for New Zealand, for I had to fly back for work, and I just reflected that I was sitting on the other side of the planet based on a very small book, 30,000 words I'd written, and you know how fortunate I was to have had that experience. And you know, I've travelled 25 countries now so far, and it's just, you know, we are very fortunate. But you know, I think, you know, we were talking about this before we started kind of recording. You know, I think this industry, this profession, whatever we're allowed to call project management, it needs characters and it needs voices. And I hope that, you know, I know you do, and I hope that others will join our ranks in speaking out and challenging what we do.
Yeah, and we need more personality, Peter. I mentioned that at the start. We really, really do. And there's all kinds of research out of there that demonstrates the importance of personality. And Lynn Crawford, who's a senior lecturer at Sydney University, she made the point, she did some research, and she said, you know, once project managers have got a base knowledge of what to do, then more knowledge doesn't make them any better. It's their personality and leadership style that does. Mm-hmm. Purcell and Hutchison, I think it was, they did some research in 2007. There's a direct correlation between an individual's personality and a successfully delivered project. You know, one of the things that I say often at my talks or training sessions is, you know, name me five project managers with the kind of personality that you just want to be around. And partly it's, we've created this monster almost, this need for certification, so it's kind of a very process-driven profession that almost quashes that personality. I find, I don't know what you see, rather than sets it free, it's like, you know, you've got to follow all of these processes.
Yeah.
And you should have to tell a project manager to fill a template in. That's our job. That's what we do. It's how we capture information. And instead of that, just let's see that personality shine a little bit. And you know, while it's great for the likes of you and I, and we get to fly and see these great places, well, it really shouldn't be the case. We should have people all around the world who are inspiring project managers to be great at what they do. And I just want to see a little bit more, I want to see a bit more personality in our profession.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I agree with you regarding the kind of certification and the kind of the professional organizations. I wrote the most popular blog article I've ever written, which was Sexy Project Management. And it was about the fact that if you go to these organizations and look how they describe project management, if you go, and I did it in the UK, I looked at all of the universities that offered a project or program management degree. And you know, it was depressingly wrist-slashing down. It was horrible the way they described it. Yeah. I was amazed that anybody ever joined any of these courses or organizations because it was so unattractive. And we, project management should be sexy. Absolutely. It is.
It is. It totally is. We're at the forefront of transformation. And, you know, I talk about the fact that they need to be the next generation of leaders. But you look at the Fortune 100 companies and you look at the CEOs and you kind of do a little bit of research into how many of them were project managers. It's hardly any.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, we should be. As a profession, we should be providing that next generation of leaders. And so, you know, hopefully we can inspire a few people to kind of get there.
Yeah, perfect. Well, Connie, it's been fantastic talking to you. So why don't you remind people about the book and tell people how they can find out more about you?
So the book is called The Project Rots from the Head, How Senior Managers Can Stop Projects Failing Forever. You can find out more about me on colindellis.com. I'll be over in the US and the UK in June, July to do a couple of talks, which I'm really looking forward to. Yeah, otherwise, keep an eye out for my blog, which is colindellis.com blog. And yeah, love to hear more about how people are inspiring people in project management around the world.
Yeah, sounds good. And of course, my last question, you know, Colin D. Ellis, do you tell people what the D stands for, or is it just a mystery?
Well, I like to let people make up their own word for that, Peter, but... We've got a history of our fathers being our second name, so yeah, it's my dad's name, so I'm Colin David Ellis. Colin after Colin Harvey, a famous Everton footballer, so...
Okay. Support. All right, well, I'm a Forest supporter myself, and I too am named after my father, Peter B. Taylor, so my dad's name was Brian, and I have stopped that tradition. I haven't forced Peter onto any of my children, so there we go. All right, Connie, it's been fantastic talking to you, and you know, it'd be great if we could try to get together when you're over in the UK. You have to let me know what dates.
Yeah, will do.
All right, thanks a lot. Wonderful stuff there. What a very interesting gentleman he is. I'm sure you'll agree. So there you go. That's it for this podcast episode. As I said, a couple of interesting insights. The next one, I'm thinking about recording the next one live in Scotland. So I'm going up to Scotland, to Edinburgh, to speak for PMI. And I'm excited because it's going to be the first presentation around my new book, How to Get Fired at the C-Level, Why Mismanaging Change is the Biggest Risk of All. So I'm going to be interested to see what the audience think about that. So what I'm considering doing is recording a little bit of the live presentation, and secondly then interviewing some people afterwards and see what they think about the topic, the challenges that I talk about, whether they recognize them and the approaches I'm recommending to deal with those challenges. So that could be interesting. We'll see how that one goes. If the next podcast is something completely different, you know that hasn't gone that well. But otherwise, if you're going to be in Edinburgh on the 8th, I think it is, 8th of June. Oh God, there we go. I can't even remember what date it is, or month it is even. The time is going so quickly. It's incredible, isn't it? So I think it's the 8th of June. Then please check us out. You can find it on the PMI.org UK site. All the details you need to be, and we're looking for a good audience to be there. And as I said, if you do turn up, you could well appear live or recorded live on the next podcast in the Lazy Project Management series. So there you go. What more could you possibly want in life? That's kind of it. I want to say thank you to listeners as ever, and as ever again, go and find out more information at www.thelazyprojectmanager.com. And that's it for all. Thanks very much.